Coming up, the Knights of Soken podcast, your favorite source for Star Wars and gaming debate, starts now.
Hey guys, welcome to the fifth episode of the Knights of Soken podcast, season two, Something to Marvel At. I'm Bakira Kwan, and alongside me I have Jay Seal Kasima and Jace Drayson.
Jace Drayson!
We're back from our mid-season break and ready to have some fun. So, how are you guys and what have you been up to since the last podcast?
Hold on. Say the title again.
Something to Marvel At.
Marvel At. I love that.
Yeah, that sounds good. When she says it, it's way better.
Way better. Yeah. Say it again, Becky.
Marvel At.
Alright, so, but like Becky said, you know, we're back from the mid-season break. Sorry, hope you guys didn't miss us too much.
You know they did.
We know we missed all y'all. I can't say that we missed each other because we all hung out over the mid-season break. So that's kind of weird.
A little bit, yeah, we kind of hung out. What did you do over the weekend, Jay?
Worked mostly. A lot of PvP. It was good. A lot of great RP coming out. Some good RP stories being built right now. Upcoming weekends I'm excited about, which we'll be talking about later on in the show.
Tons of RP for me. Great RP weekend. I know that we started the RP weekend with some Beastmaster. I saw Vecchi over at the Beastmaster class. Vecchi, pink Ractyl much?
Yes. I'm hoping it will grow up to be a formidable mount someday.
That's what she said.
So, Vecchi, what did you do over the weekend besides your Beastmastery stuff?
I took on a Padawan.
Oh, and yeah? Congratulations.
Sunivami Bishu. And we talked over each other. Oh, this happens a lot.
Oh, right. Well, and Jace, did the Ghost Squadron do anything? Do you take to the skies this weekend?
Well, we're not a weekend crew. We're more of a midweek crew, just because of how we are. But we did actually join up with the Sentinels at the middle of last week and had a joint mission over at Hoth, which was pretty exciting. Flew some scout. Went the wrong way for a little bit, but, you know, we found our way back.
And that's our faithful Ghost Squadron for you, huh? So
progress,
sneaky in their operations.
Yeah.
So sneaky in their operations, they don't know where they're going.
That's how you keep people guessing.
The enemy will never catch us if we're nowhere near them.
Well, let's move on. So, coming on, it's coming on.
The break's been good to us. The break's been good to us.
Anyways, coming up on today's show, the two guys will be talking about Battlefront regarding news and updates. Then we speculate on new terrain and planets that might be added in the future of SWTOR. And finally, a debate on Marvel versus Star Wars, something I'm sure the guys will have much to say about. So sit back and enjoy. By the way, Jace, aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper?
I mean, I've never gotten that complaint before, but I can see how you might say it.
At the end of the day, he'll always miss.
Depends on where I'm aiming, I guess.
Alright, let's talk about Battlefront. Now, there's a potential controversy in the lack of server browsers, so you can't pick the server closest to you for the best ping, and you can't always choose specific servers to get with your friends. Tell me, Jace, is this a big mistake?
I don't think it's a big mistake. I think that it's probably not the wisest course of action. I mean, when you're online and you've got your console rolling and you click that button to go to multiplayer, you want to be able to choose the server that you want to choose. And the fact that it's supposedly optimized to do this for you without you having to choose, I mean, yeah, in some ways that's a little bit easier, but I want to be able to pick what I want to pick. Is it a big mistake? No, not really. It's not a huge mistake to me. It's just not the best.
Okay, so I don't see how you can't see this as a big mistake. Let's think about this. The only thing this game is multiplayer.
Right.
What do people want to do? They want to play with their friends. If there's a chance that I can't hang out with my friends, you're going to lose player base.
Yeah, okay, you say that now, but when you get into a war zone, for instance, when we're in SWTOR, you queue up, you're in a war zone, you might think for a second, hey, I don't know anybody in this war zone, but then the next second, you're full throttle playing PvP, and you don't really care anymore. And, you know, so if you're grouped up, if you've got your squad preformed, sure, you're more likely to get into a group with your people, and I think that's important. You have to be able to play with them the majority of the time, but if sometimes you don't, it's not the end of the world. You're just going to get into that particular match, play it through, and then move on to the next match. It's not like you're going to, oh, rage quit because you didn't get in with your buddy.
Right, but it's not like Call of Duty, for example. I can just set up my squad and always be in my same squad. I can communicate with the people that I'm used to playing with. I'm not used to the random people in the group.
Yeah, I mean, I'll admit, pugs are not my favorite thing to play with all the time, and it's way better to have a preformed. It's way better to be able to play with your friends, but I don't think that it's necessarily going to be the death knell on the game. I think that if the game is good, if the PvP is good, if the combat's good, it's not that big of a deal if you're not in with your buddies all the time. I think the bigger issue, rather than being with your buddies, is what kind of ping you're getting back. If you're getting huge lag because you got in a server that's, you know, on the other side of the world from you, that's a much bigger deal to me than not getting in with my buddies all the time.
Right, so it's just another reason for that this is a big mistake.
I don't know that it's a big mistake. I think that it's probably not the best. To me, there's got to be some type of underlying tech reason that they did this, some type of matchmaking reason that they set it up like this. I'm not one that always trusts developers necessarily. I wouldn't say that I'm a fanboy by any means. But if you're cutting out the ability to choose your server, there's got to be some type of tech reason. And you're the tech guy. You know better than me that this is the reason to make the game more highly optimized. And I'd rather have a more highly optimized experience.
But
the problem is it's not.
It's not like I live in North America, right?
You do?
I live in Central North America.
Okay.
So if I connect to a server that's based in the UK, my ping's off the hook, and I'm lagging everywhere, or I can't keep up an accurate, you know, game connection, or I'm playing others, then I'm just going to be raging at EA, raging at Battlefront developers for all the lag I'm getting because I can't connect to a server that's local.
Yeah, and if that's what ends up happening, then it's a big mistake. If what ends up happening is not the most highly optimized matchmaking system, then it's a huge mistake. But I don't think that going into the process, they're going to set up a system that is so broken before we even get into it. I mean, yes, if you're in the United States and you hook up with an Aussie server, it's not you're automatically at a disadvantage. But I really believe, ultimately, that they're trying to create a system that's more balanced rather than more broken. I mean, why would they create a broken system at the get-go?
Because it's EA. Have you met them lately?
All right,
I don't know. Like, we have October 8th is around the corner, which they've already said they're going to have an open beta.
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess we'll have a chance to try it out. You know, I'm assuming servers are going to be open for us to be able to connect and stuff like that.
Are you going to play the beta?
I'm highly considering it right now, if I get the time off from work.
I'm not a beta tester, I probably won't.
Well, if you're looking forward to the beta in any way, there's a vast number of player modes in the game. Survival mode, supremacy mode, drop zone mode, and starfighter mode. So, which of these playstyles most appeal to you and why?
I'm actually looking forward to one of the modes that actually you didn't list, and that's the Fighter Squadron.
Yes, I'm so shocked you said that.
Yeah, I don't like Soul Tour's base system, but I love the old Battlefront system.
I love all of it, but that really does surprise me. I'm just really blown away. I thought I was going to have to make a case today about Fighter Squadron being a BA system to multiplayer with, and that you'd be trying to put some poo-poo on it, but you made me feel better.
I don't know. But I guess, I don't know. For me, ultimately, though, I'm looking forward to the Supremacy mode. I'm talking about 40-player clash battles on the planets that are in the game. It's going to be epic. You're the hero. You know, you can try to set it up. I mean, you can probably get some roleplay out of this if you get it set up properly.
How are you going to get roleplay out of a PvP? I mean, I'm a big-time role player, but how are you going to get roleplay out of Fighter Squadron in Battlefront?
I moved on to Supremacy, so let's...
Oh, sorry, maybe.
Right, but even in that, like, so let's say you get, you know, grouped up with people. If you can do it with groups, you know, you have a bunch of people on a headset, Xbox One, PS4, PC, I guess, if people are into that kind of thing.
Oh, God, here we go.
You know, but you can just record what y'all are saying and be like, someone could be like a rogue leader, you know, or for like the Supremacy mode, you could have one person who's the Vader, you know, and he's like commanding his other 19 people of his troops.
Force lightning, force choke, force lightning, force lightning.
Yo, I mean, you're hating right now, but if that's a winning strat, that's a winning strat, you know?
Last thing I'm doing is hating. I am so excited about some of these modes that I cannot see straight.
Well, what are you looking forward to? Obviously, you're looking forward to the Fighter Squadron, but what else
obviously,
are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to... Okay, so there's a Capture the Flag mode, which is going to be like, I think they call it Drop Zone.
Yeah.
I love Capture the Flag. I love it in real life. I love it in video games. Capture the Flag, to me, is one of the most fun types of games you can ever play. And they're doing it with this Drop Zone, evidently like escape pods are falling out of the sky and you've got to guard them, so it's like Capture the Flag is the flag is actually the escape pod. Then there's Walker Assault. Effing walkers on Hoth. AT-ATs, are you kidding me? That's going to be epic, awesome. What's it called? Oh yeah, you already said Supremacy, mm-hmm. which I don't think that there's a bad mode in the game.
I have to agree. I'm actually, because I'm such a big fan of death matches, I'm looking forward to Blast.
Yeah, some epic deathmatch PvP is going to be pretty awesome.
You know, that's 10-on-10, you know, hook up with your buddies. Hopefully, if the servers work out, EA, please save us.
It's going to work. It'll be fine.
My faith in EA is lacking.
So one of the biggest things I'm excited about is getting to fly the Millennium Falcon. So there have been times through the course of Star Wars gaming that you've been able to fly the Millennium Falcon, but it is few and far between. Also, Slave One, you know, if you're into that bad guy side, which I'm not, but the ability to have a hero mode in space or in atmosphere in flight is extremely exciting for me. I cannot wait for it.
Guys, I'm going to have to cut you a little short here because
oh my God.
You are the... I have a question. Would you like to hear it?
I always want to hear you talk, Vecchi.
He's lying. Right, so
there's a lot of controversy and a lot of questions about when it comes out, but probably one of the most controversial parts of the game is that there will be no single-player mode. Will this affect sales, or at least your willingness to purchase and play the game?
I mean... I'm bummed about there not being single player, but I don't think that that's going to affect sales, nor does it affect my willingness to buy the game. In fact, I have an Xbox 360 to this day that I enjoy. This game is going to push me over the line to buy the Xbox One. So not only am I going to buy the game, but I'm going to buy a completely new gaming system in order to play the game.
And I've actually thought about this a lot, because I will be picking this up for console. But I love campaign modes on console games. I love story. I love console games so much. I feel that, you know, like I discussed, you know, in the last podcast when we did the PC versus console debate, is I feel like console games have more enriched campaigns and story behind them. I just don't want to see this happening where I can't enjoy a good story. Like, even though the Call of Duty stories aren't the highlights of the Call of Duty games, or same thing with Battlefield, they still have it there. I've still enjoyed it to some point than me just hopping in line and shooting some guy in the head.
The problem with there being story at this point is Disney is pretty committed to anything they put out within the Star Wars universe becoming canon. They've said multiple times that whether it's a comic book, whether it's a video game, whether it's a TV show, and obviously the movies, what they're putting out from this point forward from Disney is part of Star Wars canon. Right. So that if you put a story into a video game, especially using these iconic characters, we're talking about Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Boba Fett, we're in that time period, it's going to be really hard to put together a story that can fit into this the classic canon, as well as what they're doing pressing forward with the next films.
Right, I don't disagree with that, and I definitely understand what the problem is, which brings me to a point that I'm actually really excited about announcing, is there's actually rumor that we could still get a campaign mode, but in later DLC.
Well, I mean, I'm not against it by any means, don't get me wrong. I love campaign mode myself. In fact, that's how I like to learn to play a game. I'd rather go through a campaign, get confident in my abilities with my little pressy button pew-pew, so that then once I get into some PvP, I'm not a complete and total noob. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Right, and of course, I mean, but I think Disney could use this to make an even better bridge of gap of the little skirmishes that happen in different episodes.
They could.
Guys, I'm going to have to stop you. We're running out of time.
You hate us today, Vecchi.
Well, you have a lot to say, and it's awesome. We just don't have the time for it. So let's move on to something different.
I don't know, Jace. Is there any, like, heroes that you're really looking forward to playing Battlefront?
I know that this is cliche, but I'm looking forward to being Luke Skywalker. A little bit of a man crush.
I was thinking about when we were talking about the walker mode.
Yep.
I definitely would want to, you know, reenact the scene where you trip the walkers.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I'm a huge Vader fan, so I'm looking forward to being Vader. So, okay, Becky.
I have already moved on. Planets, terrain, let's talk about this. Now, there are various types and environments on planets, like city, jungle, forest, swamp, wasteland, and much more. What type would you like to see the most, Jay?
I want to see a swamp. I want to see, or like an underwater city. I love Anon, I love Naboo. Just things that just shout out to me in lore. Did some RP with, some form RP with Master Core. When he was still... We just became a knight, actually, on Naboo, so... Trying to save the world from Jar Jar Binks and just couldn't do it. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, it's a rough one. I'm just going to settle on Swamp. I'm a big Dagobah fan, and I think that there's this lack of swamp environments in Star Wars video gaming in general.
I think there's a lack of wooded environments at this point now, especially in, you know, Star Wars The Old Republic. I mean, Kashyyyk would be great.
Or Endor. You know, in Star Wars Galaxies, there was Endor that was like a wooded type of environment. I spent a lot of time training my Jedi in Star Wars Galaxies on Endor.
Yeah, I feel like we're missing a lot of like the more classic places as well. I mean, we have Mustafar, which we see at the end of episode 3. Definitely missing, you know, Mandalore. You know, our time period right now that we play in isn't too much or too much further in the timeline from the Mandalorian Wars.
I know little to nothing about Mandalore, so it would be interesting for me, if for no other reason, just to see what the hell Mandalore looks like. I mean, because I have no idea.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we touched on the subject back in season 1, and there's just so many iconic places that we could sit here and talk about for hours. And it's just something else that BioWare could use to enrich the Star Wars The Old Republic environment.
I'll tell you what I don't want to see. I don't want to see another cityscape.
What would you think about a planet with multiple types of terrains and climates?
Like an example?
Not just as an idea, a theory.
Well, like planet Earth, for instance, has multiple terrains and environments and biomes.
Yeah, there's both.
Well, if you think about it, that's what we have Alderaan for.
Well, sorta. I mean, kind of. Well,
and then you can look at Bel Savis in game. Bel Savis is set up that way. It's jungle-ish. You have
but not
volcanic
really.
Places.
I mean, sorta. I see what you're saying, but in general, it's almost like these planets are singular environments that you inhabit. So Bel Savis surely has those ice walls and it's icy big up and high, but then down low, it's that same type of greenery that you're down on the actual planet surface, with occasional crosses of snow and ice, but it's not hugely diverse. In general, the Star Wars galaxy has this... almost archetypal planets. You know, you've got the forest moon, or you've got the
right,
desert
right.
planet.
But let's think about this, right? We have a fictional universe. Yes, this is fictional. I know a lot of people get confused. Where, what if every planet you ever saw, no matter where you went, was all Earth? It was always Earth. No matter where you went, there was a forest over there, a desert over there. Here's some mountain ranges. Let's go to another planet. Hey, look, there's mountain ranges, a desert, forest. You see what I'm saying? Like,
no,
that's what's great
about
creating an archetype for each planet, and that's what you see. Like, you see this not only in the Star Wars universe, but most universes in general. It creates dynamic to that level, to that planet, to that universe to continue, because readers, players would get bored if they saw the same environment that they were already used to. Part of the great things about video gaming is the chance to escape. What better way to escape than to an environment that you naturally don't go to?
Yes. You're right, except that all of those environments are based on environments that we already find on Earth. There's not, I can't really point to any of the planets necessarily that look like anything that you can't find somewhere on the planet at any given moment. Probably my favorite planet in game is Voss. And part of the reason that it's my favorite planet is because it does look so diverse as far as sky color, as far as earth color, as far as the whole planet has this... it's not monochrome, but it's like it's a sense that you're on a real place that actually exists. I mean, and all the planets have that to a certain extent, but Voss seems unique. Like, I don't know I could go anywhere on the planet that I live on and find a Voss.
Africa.
All right. Final question, guys. Now, is there a planet from lore that would be a mistake to add to the universe, the SWTOR universe and such?
No more ice planets. If there's another damn ice planet, I'm quitting.
He's not quitting. That's a lie.
If there's another ice planet that they put in the game, I will quit.
Any input there, Jay-Z?
I'm trying to think if there's any planet that I wouldn't want to see, and I really can't think of one. There's not a planet that I haven't researched or discovered, that I haven't naturally fallen in love with one way or another, and love to see it in a cinematic viewing or a way to just roam the land.
Well, that is an answer in itself. Let's move on to some commercials.
Enjoying today's show? Interested in joining the Knights of Soken? If these apply to you, please visit us at www.knightsofsoken.com and click the apply button above. Also, feel free to send a comment our way on Twitter at Knights of Soken, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Knights of Soken. Now, back to our show.
Shut up and sit down.
Welcome back, and today we have with us Quagan on the show. Quagan's a knight in the Soken Order, and Quagan, how are you doing today?
Very good, actually. Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure thing. First things first, how long have you been a knight of Soken?
Well, 6 months, really.
About 6 months. So let's talk about your journey with Soken. Let's talk about, you know, how you found out about us. Let's talk about your knighthood. Let's talk about just what you've been up to in the guild from the time you joined up until here recently.
Sure. Well, actually, when I got introduced to Soken, I found, as everybody does, a message, and it was from Russ, actually, that he was recruiting on Tython. And I thought, okay, I'm going to check out this website. When I did, it was like, oh my god, what's this? I mean, I watched the video, and I was like, oh, this is in a whole other level, and I'm going to be a part of it.
Nice.
And then, actually, for you guys to know, I was a Sith Pureblood back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I guess that didn't work out so well, right?
I changed my race in order to enter the Soken.
Nice.
Yes.
Awesome. For the listeners who don't know, we are a core lore, heavy lore-based guild, and Pureblood Siths are not permitted to roleplay Jedi within the guild. So, yeah.
Yes, totally. And I said, okay, give me a second. I'm going to change my race. Please invite me to that guild. It was pretty good, actually. I had a lot of time, good times here, an excellent experience. I never been in a guild this big, actually. And it took me a while to kind of get hang of the guild, but I was enjoying every class. Ross, Tremrith, all of them that started giving class. It was so cool. I never had an experience like this. And well, after a while I said, okay, I want to get involved with this, I want to put my part on it.
Let me ask you this, have you ever role played before, and if so, what other formats have you done role play in?
Actually, I never role played before Soken. I was
nice.
Kind of doing something little RPs. I didn't know how to mode well as well. I just find it out I didn't know how the role system worked. Actually, I didn't know much about how the guys like you were RPing on this game. When I got into Soken, it was like, whoa, I had to learn a lot, because looking at all the classes, seeing how everyone was emoting, I felt like, okay, I'm out of my league here.
Well, I would never have known that. That's awesome, because you're a really good RPer, so kudos to you for being able to jump right in and look like an old pro at it. Good work.
I remember the first week of me being an initiate, right? I remember I entered a Sunday. I entered just before the initiations meeting, and I was like, what the hell is this? This is huge. And I went to the initiation meeting, and then I stood like 1 week going to every class and not saying even a word, because I was terrified of what I'm going to. I was like, oh, I had to learn everything. I just started writing notes and doing this and that. And then next week I started participating a little more, trying to use whatever I saw there. And that's how I grow, man.
That's incredible. I can relate to a lot of those feelings. I do have some RP background myself, but yeah, coming into Soken, it's a whole nother world. Yeah. Of organization and just bigness. So, here lately, you've kind of taken on some new responsibilities. I know you're teaching some classes. I know that you've taken over the welcoming committee. Let's start with some of the classes. What are you teaching, and kind of what's your method?
Well, when I got into night, I said, like, okay, I'm going to give everything I got, because giving classes or teaching classes, one thing that I really enjoy. And I went to Ol's class. You remember Master Ol's Ninks?
I absolutely do.
Well, and he was teaching telekinetics with kind of a cylinder that have some disgusting liquid. If you kind of manipulate it wrong, you will be...
Yeah, I was at that class, man. Yeah, I remember.
I think it's memorable. It's totally memorable. And say, okay, if I teach something, I want it to be like this, because people kind of enjoy not just saying words and trying to teach, you know, text or lore, but they want to feel like, oh, what if I do it wrong, right? And
exactly.
So my first classes began being the 2-10 minutes class, and my first class was aiming at a tank's laser beam into initiates. What called?
Yeah, trial by fire, Quagan, golly.
The energy had to be, of course, reduced a lot, almost kind of nothing. But I remember how the initiates emoted that time. Okay, that you're going to kill us now. I totally enjoy it. And then I have some force deflection class that I kind of used my companions, my animal companions, in character. So it was really good. I just, my method is never trying to not make one class same as the previous.
Exactly. I'm going to have to make my way to some of your classes here coming up pretty soon. I do a breath control class, and I did one in the on the Vigilant, on the
Force Barrier
hangar deck. Yeah, and I like to give an experience too, and I think that's part of what makes Soken great is, you know, we have people like you that don't just want to come in and kind of phone in a class or give your standard pat answer, but you want to give an experience to people who are participating in our guild, and I think that's awesome. Speaking of, talk to me about the Welcoming Committee. What are you guys doing in the Welcoming Committee? Where did you get your ideas for the Welcoming Committee? And where do you see yourself going in the future with it?
Oh, that's interesting, right? When I was offered the Soken Welcoming Committee, I was like, okay, I know a little about it. I just saw the messages in the Soken community chat. Uh-huh. And I felt that it was a great idea, just introducing the initiates into Soken, answering the questions. Many of them didn't know how to RP. The thing is, I'm more like a quiet guy, a shy guy that just stay there, try to learn, take his notes. And the other day he had improved, but some of them kind of really want to get in contact or in touch with people that actually teach them how to do it.
Yeah.
Faster that way, you know, and you can make it a much enjoyable RP as well, because you get to know people.
Yeah.
And when I was there, I thought, okay, this is a great idea of introducing persons or people to the guild. But the thing is that writing into the chat was kind of okay. You had to whisper someone in order to get an answer, right? And some of the people may be as shy as I was. And I thought, well, many of the people I'm going to attract by writing a message, right? But some of them, I won't going to miss them, and they maybe left the guild. So when I began working on the Soken committee, and we were trying to, we know that initiates were coming, and I saw one of them kind of feel lost. It was like, man, I have to be there. That's my job. I felt it like it was my obligation, my duty to the guild.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then one day I opened to the guild roster, and I saw 25% of the guild population was initiates and force sensitive, and it was, my God, this is a lot of people, and we have to work for them as well. So looking at the lore and Arcus that was in here before I joined the Soken Welcome Committee, he was awesome with me. He just taught me everything that they already was doing, and I thought, okay. We had to make this. I want to give my personality into this. I wanted to get it improved. I wanted people to get excited about being introduced, right?
Right.
So looking at the Jedi lore, I was like, oh my God, what about the clans? All groups of Jedi that really are younglings in character, right? And teach them everything they need to know about Soken and the game in character and outside of character. The idea of also having different clans and making some initiate tournaments or something for the masters to notice the initiate was also a great idea. And I asked, I talked about with Arcus, and we said, hell yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Nice.
Yeah, and then I just thought, okay, we need the council's permission, and I just started writing kind of a project, right? The council, trying to write every detail of what we're trying to do, how I was planning to implement it, because I know that having an idea is great. It's mostly the 50% part of the job, but also implement it, it's the other 50. You can have the greatest idea of all, but if you implement it wrong, it will be nothing.
Right, you've got to have actions to those ideas, absolutely.
Yes, and I was kind of receiving a lot of support from the players, from the community. That's awesome. It's an awesome community. Sulia, I was learning from Kai, Boas, Mixero, all of them just were so great with me. And I thought, okay, let me figure it out what I want to do. Let me get the approval. Let me hold the horses a little bit so we can do this right. We started, and things are going great, actually. I'm really enjoying doing this right now.
Well, I have heard nothing but good things. I was in the channel when I heard Master Roz, you know, Council Member Roz, talking about your write-up, and he was really impressed with what you came up with and really impressed with your ideas. Where do you see the Welcoming Committee go? What do you think's next for you guys?
Well, actually, as a part of the recruiter, I am a Soken recruiter as well, because I really, in character, I really like, I imagine Quagan as an instructor that really enjoys working with initiates and force sensitive, mostly because they are the future of the order, right? Quagan's contribution to Soken, I think, will be like instructing and helping the future Jedi. So I imagine the future, for example, okay, we introduce a new person. If that person wants to RP the introduction, okay, we're going to be there. So if a master or an instructor or a knight or whatever Jedi who want to take part, I also have plans for making RPs of going to, for example, a remote planet, Tatooine, right? And we find an initiate or a young member who wants to join Soken, and we RP. How is he going to get into? Then when he gets into the temple, we show them the temple. It's kind of, okay, you join Soken, you press accept to that guild invitation, and you start the RP.
Right.
You don't have to wait to be a Padawan. You don't have to wait to get a master in order to start enjoying the Soken RP, because I think Soken is greater than that.
So two things I want to ask you before we let you go. First of all, that accent of yours is pure sex. What kind of accent is that? Where are you from, man?
Well, I'm from Uruguay, South America. Sorry if I don't speak really good. I had my accent.
No. Do not apologize. It's pure awesome. Second of all, who is a Jedi in lore that you kind of look up to? Who's your favorite Jedi in Star Wars lore?
Well, since I started watching the movies of Star Wars, and unfortunately the new ones, my favorite master, because of the lore and his personality, has to be Plo Koon.
Plo Koon, nice. Haven't got that answer before.
Yeah, I really love Plo Koon. I mean, he was a recruiter. He had the personality that I really like for a Jedi. He was a really good Jedi master. Even though if he had council position because of Qui-Gon not taking theirs, I think that's the case. But I think he's one of the best Jedi. I really like Keldor, so if in the game they're adding Keldor, Pagan's going to be Keldor.
An instant transfer. We've been having a lot of that in the guild lately.
Yeah.
Thank you, Quagan, recruiter, welcoming committee master. We appreciate you being here and looking forward to everything that you're doing.
Well, thank you for having me, guys. I really enjoy being here and listening to all the podcast. You are doing an excellent job, and thank you for the invite.
Thank you. It's people like Wagon that make Soken so awesome. So, Vecchi, what do you have next for us?
All right, on to a very interesting topic, at least I think so. Marvel versus Star Wars. Now, which universe has the richest lore in terms of places, people, and things?
Before I get into this, I do want to say this is very interesting. I've argued Marvel vs. DC. I've argued Star Wars versus other things. I've never argued these two together, so I'm really excited.
I'm honestly a little torn because I'm in love with both of the universes, so I don't even know what my argument would be.
Right.
So we'll see, I guess.
So here we are. Our first question starting up is, which has the richest lore in terms of places, people, and things? I have to say Star Wars.
How funny, because I think I have to say Marvel.
But this is my thing. Like, I grew up on comic books. I love comic books. I grew up with the Marvel Universe. DC can go burn for the most part.
Easy killer. Golly.
But Star Wars, you have people that just come up off the top of your heads naturally. Like, characters that are always going to come up with. Places, people, things that I want to go and visit. You know, you look at the majority of the events that happen in the Marvel Universe, they're here on Earth. I've been to Earth. I can go visit these places in real life. It's not that interesting to me. I want to go travel the sands of Tatooine. I want to go see the space dust where Alderaan once was.
It's a little morbid, but so in terms of places, I guess I see your point, because it's definitely a lot more exotic to think of the Star Wars locales, the Star Wars places, than it is the Marvel places. But when in terms of characters, in terms of people, there's just so many more iconic people. Yes, Star Wars people are hugely iconic. However, Marvel has this universe full of people that any of us, any person off the street, could come up and kind of just riff on for a really long time. I mean, and there's not just a small number of people. The thing about Star Wars is a lot of the universe is in the expanded universe. So, in general, when we talk about the two universes, so much of the Star Wars universe was relegated to this back seat of, you know, most of America doesn't know about them. But Marvel, especially now with like the Marvel Renaissance, people know these characters, whether it's through Netflix, whether it's through these huge movies, whether it's through the ABC programs. These really minor characters in the universe are coming to the forefront of American culture.
Right. But I think we're talking about the richest lore behind these people. I can take these characters you're talking about, you know, X-Men, Iron Man, the Avengers, etc., and all these groups, and I could show pictures to several people, and they might be able to name, obviously, the most iconic people, which are going to be the Avengers and a few X-Men. But I can show people pictures of Chewbacca, Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker. Everyone's going to know who those are. Everyone's going to know their iconic backgrounds. They're going to know their iconic stories behind them. How many people are going to know the origins of Iron Man, the true origins of Iron Man, not what's just captivated in the movie?
I don't know, man. I think you can make a pretty good case that...
Well, this is my thing, though, is in Star Wars, you have the same beginning, no matter if you talk about Luke, right? So we'll talk about Luke. I know who his mom is. I know who his dad is. There's only one universe. We look at the Marvel, you have the multiverse, where there's millions of different variations of each character and their background.
Right, but there is a core story behind each one of those characters. No matter what part of the multiverse you're looking at, there's this core element that no matter when in time and space this character happens, they still have that piece of them that makes them that character.
Right, and I think that's actually what causes me to lose interest in most of the multiverse, and I kind of like Star Wars characters more for this reason. I'm not going to see 30 different Luke Skywalkers.
No, you're not. And that's exactly right. And that is part of what dilutes the universe. But it's also, in terms of richness, in terms of depth, it does give a lot more depth and kind of this multifaceted view to a universe when you think of Marvel. There's not just one story. There have been stories that have been told for many, many, many years in many, many iterations through many generations.
And I mean, that I do agree with, but let's think about how many times in the Marvel Universe we've reset the universe. When have you really ever reset the Star Wars universe?
Well,
up into Disney buying LucasArts.
I mean, and that's exactly true. And even then, you didn't really reset the whole universe, just the expanded universe. The core universe, the movie universe, didn't get reset. It didn't get changed. So in that sense, it is a lot more pure, for sure.
Right. And I mean, don't take this away. I love the Marvel Universe. I love the majority of the characters in the Marvel Universe. I just feel that the Star Wars has a richer lore and background to it, because it's not as diluted with the many different possibility stories of each character.
I don't know.
Well, I would say it's a bit of a trick question, because everyone is going to have a different opinion on this. There is no absolute. But let's try something a bit more directly subjective, like mutant powers or the Force. Which would you rather have, Jace?
The Force. I would much rather have the Force. Now, this is no joke. I'm going to probably put myself out there a little bit too much right now. But ever since I've been, like, in the second grade, I have had this fantasy of having Force powers. Like, I probably don't go a whole day through my life without imagining, what would I do right now if I had the Force as my ally? So I have to go with the Force on that one.
I'm going to go with mutant powers. Like, yeah, the Force guides you, and you can use the Force to do some cool stuff. But with the mutant power, you know that was your birthright to have that. In most cases. I'm talking about pure mutants who have developed these through genetics. You know, not just like your normal superpowers you got from some science experiment in a lab. But, you know, I was born to be able to manipulate fire. I was born to be able to lift things with my mind. These aren't things that I'm just going to chance, but it's still something that I'm going to have from my birth that I know I was supposed to have.
But I think that argument could be made for the Force. I think that especially in the core universe and the stories, the Force being a part of your legacy is a huge thing. I mean, look,
right,
the Skywalker story is all about the lineage of the Skywalker connection to the Force.
Right, so you've mentioned the Snowwalkers already.
Already, yes, I have.
So let's think about this. How many Jedi has the Force either abandoned or chosen somebody else? How many Jedi are weaker in the Force than others, so the Force doesn't come to them as often? If you have a mutant power, you have that mutant power no matter what. That's what you make of it.
Yeah, but some mutant powers are crap. Like, I always felt real sorry for, what's that guy who screams, who flies by screaming? What's
Banshee?
His name? Banshee. That's a terrible power. What an embarrassment. Like, your whole power is that you're screaming. Like, that's just humiliating. I can fly,
well, okay.
But while I'm doing, I have
so
to wail.
So
like,
you have that, but then you have Black Bolt, who has a similar power, but who could like merely whisper and destroy a planet with his voice.
Okay, but yeah, there are some really cool mutant powers, absolutely, but they're limited to whatever it is.
Exactly, so which I think draws even more dynamic and more of a chance to the Force is always is either going to be there or not be there. Your mutant power is what you make of it.
Well, so is the Force. I mean, if you have the connection to the Force, then it's what you make of it. If. Right, but if you have a mutant power. Unfortunately, me, I was not born with a mutant power, so I don't have one. Just like I don't have a connection to the Force in real life, but don't tell anyone. Whatever, it doesn't matter. I think your point is a little moot. Whatever power you have, you either can make the most of it or not. I feel like the connection you'd have to the Force would be a much deeper, meaningful, mystical power to have in this world or anywhere.
Right, I don't disagree with that, but for the mere fact that you don't know how strong your connection is going to be. So not only are you gambling on your connection, but you have to gamble as if it's ever going to abandon you. Let's say multiple people have the Force, and it's not just you, and you get into a fight or a confrontation with this other person, the Force chooses them. You see that happen in lore all the time. But at no time is my mutant ability going to abandon me.
It may not abandon you, but it could be completely overshadowed by another mutant power.
Right, I mean, and so could someone's presence in the Force compared to yours.
Exactly. So make that's exactly my point. Those arguments are moot whether or not you want to have Force powers or mutant powers, because those negatives happen on both sides, so they're a wash.
Right, and I do agree with that. But the thing is I'm always going to have my mutant power, no matter what. Always. It's part of me. It's my being. No one can sever my connection from my power.
That's not true. I seen this one movie one time where Wolverine had lost his power because this Chinese man took it away from him.
Yeah, so first of all the Wolverine movies are... I can't use this language on the show. You know, and that's where we have to draw the line. Like, this is what I hate about when we talk about multiverses, is the Marvel universe on the big screen is its own universe.
Right.
And a lot of it is convoluted and more language I can't use.
There are incidents of the same thing happening in the comic books. Like Storm, I believe, loses her powers at one point.
Well, her powers abandon her from her lack of faith in herself, so...
Whoa, he knew the exact story you were talking about. He pulled it out of his pocket and said, hello.
I keep telling you guys, you know, from the very beginning, I even talked about this in, you know, season one. I'm a huge Marvel fan. I love the Marvel Universe. That's what I grew up with. That was my connection, you know, through childhood. You know, Star Wars is something I got into as an adult.
I still feel like, and I'm, don't get me wrong, if I had the chance to get a mutant power, I would snatch it. Snatch it. But I still feel like if I had to choose between the two, the power of the Force would be something that made me feel like I could do more good and more right in the world.
And I guess this is my problem, is I've always had the mindset of a supervillain.
Damn it!
I think we found the root of the issue here.
I always knew this show was about good versus evil.
Well, I have a question for you. It's not really good versus evil, but it might appeal to both of you. Could any Sith or any Jedi take down the Hulk?
There's not an answer to this question.
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. Let's break it down a little bit. First of all, Jaziel, you're going to have to answer this for me because I don't know. Could a lightsaber cut through the Hulk's skin?
Yes.
Yes. So then, yes. To me, taking that to the next step, it would seem very logical that a Jedi or a Sith could potentially kill the Hulk. No?
I can't disagree with that. At the same time, we have to look at which version of the Hulk we're talking about.
Oh my god. The green one.
No. I'm talking about the green one. That's what I'm talking about with the multiverse. You know, there's so many different variations of the Hulk and what his abilities can do, his regeneration rate, how fast he gets angry, how fast his body naturally reacts. I mean, if we look at the movie universe, there's actually a deleted scene of Bruce Banner. He goes up into the mountains to, off himself because he can't handle the pressure of the Hulk. And before he could even transform, or before he could even pull the trigger, he transforms, the gun explodes in his hand, nothing ever happens.
Well, he alludes to that actually in the movies. He says he put the gun to his mouth and the big guy spit it out.
Yeah. And this is the same thing is, you ask me, is there a chance that a lightsaber could? Yes, there definitely can be. There's also the chance that his body reacts fast enough that a lightsaber can't. I mean, we've seen in comic books where the Hulk gets hit by high concentrated laser beams from this hero or that. I mean, we have things like we've seen Iron Man use lasers to cut through doors, which I can only presume would be the same kind of intensity as a lightsaber, and it just hit Hulk like it's just a regular blaster.
I don't know. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, but I kind of feel like a lightsaber might just bounce off Hulk. I mean, I think he might be that dense, that powerful, that lightsabers may not do the type of damage that we assumed right off the bat that it would.
And exactly. I mean, I'm not saying like he would. I think he might get cut a little bit, but I think he's just going to get to the point where he's just going to end up punching whatever it is or throwing a giant boulder, and it's going to break the concentration of said Sith or Jedi.
What about Force Choke? What if Darth Vader comes up on the Hulk and Force chokes him? Oxygen important to the Hulk or no?
Different variations again, but there's been variations of the Hulk flying through space as he's falling from the sun back to Earth.
Okay, well, if the sun can't destroy Hulk, I'm going to have to go with the Jedi and the Sith cannot hurt the Hulk.
Well, I guess this was another bit of a trick question, but you did enlighten a lot of stuff that I personally was interested in, so thank you.
So we did have the small break and we're back from it. Getting caught up on everything. Congratulations to the now Knight, Yashida, Jeremiah, Zetho, Mabu. All special congratulations to our masters taking up new positions. We have Master Eridus taking over the head branch of the Guardians, Master Belladonna taking over the head branch of the Sentinels, and as well as our Master Mistana taking over the head branch of the Consulars. Some huge events coming up, as always. Tons of events always of the week coming up with 43. Some special ones coming up in the future, though. October 3rd, there's two big events. We have the pod race in the early afternoon, which will be different than our past pod races. It will be on Hoth instead of Tatooine. And then we have my story arc that I have going on with my Sith, where right now we have Master Kazuma and Knight Solbusk on Orokan. Finding something very familiar. Ghost Squadron's already on standby.
Dun dun dun.
So as always, come check us out. Guild ceremony every Wednesday. Special TRP throughout the week. Stay tuned on the calendar.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, guys. For Jace Ilkasima and Jace Strayson, I'm Kira Kwan, and see you all next week. And Jace, my little stormtrooper, this is some podcast. You came in here and you didn't have a plan for getting out?
I never do.
Story of his life. Stay classy, Soken.
Thanks for tuning in to the Knights of Soken podcast. Please click the subscribe button below and follow us on Twitter at Knights of Soken. And look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Knights of Soken.